You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
September the 30th, 2020, and yes, that circus theme music, that might be one good description. Oh, not just for the whatever happened last night between Trump and Biden, but for this program. I mean, this program. You know, there is a saying in the business, the show must go on. I want to find the person that said that and put them up against the firing squad. But it is a fact. You got to. Folks are expecting it. You cannot miss it. It's got to be there. The only thing short of me being here and on the air live with you right now would be me being down deep in a bottle of Jack after watching last night. Although I can do that and still climb out and get here. Wouldn't drive myself, but I could still be here. Well, I can be on the air intoxicated. No, I don't do that either. All right. I do have some things behind the scenes I need to share with you in this segment. Not excuses, just things. But let's look at the event last night. What would you call it? A circus? A cage match? A debate? My oldest daughter in West Palm Beach said her word was debacle. Yeah. That's pretty good. I like that one, too. Let me put it to you this way. I've been to a lot of goat ropings and train wrecks, and I don't think I've seen anything near as fascinating as what was going on last night, and yet I walked away with, what just happened? And I was trying to look away. I was trying to say, you know, there's nothing here but sound and fury. But I was still watching while I was playing an online poker game. Oh, I can do both. And in fact, I did well enough. I'll come back to that in a moment. But yeah, there was a lot of back and forth. And the best point, I think, at one time was President Trump pointing to Chris Wallace saying, am I debating you or Biden? That's pretty clear, wasn't it? There were a lot of points that we want to get into the best we can. And when I say the best we can is because I've had printer problems from the moment I walked in here today. We've gone through two printers, and one that does work is about as slow as molasses, and the other one is just dead. And then the internet is just so slow. I think I've got a bunch of gremlins in here. I'm sure I do. I consider this a conspiracy. They were turned loose in here overnight, knowing that when I came in today, I was going to be geared up. We're going to rock and roll this program. We're still going to, but they're not helping me. So a lot of the sound bites I was trying to pull and have ready from last night, I don't have. I'm telling you up front, I don't. I've got some. Not some of the ones I really want, but I can walk us through it. And I got response and reaction coming up. And we've got a couple of guests that, thank God, I booked two today. One will be Chris Bedford, political writer for The Federalist, and his take on the debate, debacle, circus, cage match, goat roping last night. And the other one will be Dr. Gerard Lomero, will be also joining us. So you will get some professional people on this program, not counting me, and I'm not sure I could count myself at this point. But we're going to get into a lot of that for you. And we're going to go back and forth on some of the analysis. This program is not going to be all that I wanted it to be for you. And all the excuses aside for the printer problems and network failing me, can't pull sound bites, things of this nature, we are going to make it work for you. Oh, yes. As I mentioned last night while I was watching and listening, I was also playing online poker tournament. How did I do? Well, I didn't get first. I didn't get second. I did get third, and it paid. Now, that's about the only thing last night I think was really accomplished, in my opinion. So get ready for this ride. I will tell you this, any landing we can walk away from is a good landing. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now, that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand, and Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest, best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
When I listen to Joe talking about a transition, there's been no transition from when I won. I won that election. And if you look at Crooked Hillary Clinton, if you look at all of the different people, there was no transition because they came after me trying to do a coup. They came after me spying on my campaign. They started from the day I won and even before I won, from the day I came down the escalator with our first lady. They were a disaster. They were a disgrace to our country. And we've caught them. We've caught them all.
That was, of course, President Trump last night, making it clear that you guys have had it in for me while I was even announcing. And then the fact that I won has just irritated you, and it continues to get under your skin. Now, that was one of the more longer pieces of either of the candidates. It was actually uninterrupted. I guess if you're looking at who threw the most punches, I mean, if you look at it as a boxing match, as to who was throwing the most punches, whether or not they landed, I guess it would say Trump did, that he possibly did more interrupting. But Biden was doing it as well. He also was doing it, not as well, I should say, because he wouldn't be vocal about it, just kind of mumble. Well, you know, that's right. No, yeah, you know, he'd say, he was saying something. But if you're looking at trying to keep the opponent off balance a little bit and flailing away, even if it's a haymaker that never lands, Trump, I guess, wins that part of it. Biden did a good cover-up up against the ropes, and he fired a few back, a few jabs. Of course, if you're looking to ask for who's a winner, I think this is one of these that I'm not sure they'll put it down as a draw. They'll put it down as a both lost, possibly. But, of course, we know that there will be those who will spin it one way or the other. Well, what did Donald Trump think when it was done? Let's look at his response first. He said on Twitter, after sharing a New York Times article about how Chris Wallace did, that was a moderator, and of course that was also a festering issue throughout the entire event. I'll come back to that. President Trump on his Twitter said, Chris had a tough night. He went right to Chris Wallace. He said, 2-on-1 was not surprising, but fun. Yeah, he was again saying that basically Chris was mainly going after me. I tend to think that's right, but I also think Trump invited a lot of it because he was ignoring the debate, quote, rules. But I did mark down last night, even as I'm playing poker watching this thing online, I couldn't help but see the part where Biden was making some remarks about how things should be done. He repeatedly told Trump to shut up and described the president as a clown, the worst president America's ever had, called him a racist. And Trump described Biden as not smart. He said, don't ever use the word smart with me. Nothing smart about you, Joe. And on his tweet today, he said, many important points to be made, like throwing Bernie, AOC, +3, and the rest to the wolves. Radical left is dumping Sleepy Joe, zero Democrat enthusiasm, weak leadership. Well, on that issue last night that came up, as Trump was pounding on Biden, say, where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on this? You've got to parrot the leftist line, or are you going to lose voters? That was mentioned numerous times by Trump. Numerous times he said, if you can't say this because you'll lose all your left-wing support. And they got into the talking about the Green New Deal and violence in the streets. And Biden at one point wanted to say and did say, all of those people, all that stuff is nothing. I am the party.
One of the big debates we had with 23 of my colleagues trying to win the nomination that I won were saying that Biden wanted to allow people to have private insurance still. They can. They do. They will under my proposal.
It's not what you've said, but and it's not what your party has said.
That is simply
your party
a lie.
Doesn't say it. Your party wants simple. To go socialist
my
medicine
party is
and
me.
Socialist
right
healthcare.
Now, I am
and
the
they're going to dominate
party.
You, Joe. You know that.
I am the Democratic Party right now. The platform of the
not
Democratic Party
Harris.
Is what I, in fact, approved of.
Ah, see? Biden's an eye on the party now. Well, one of the responses I was looking for today was, how did Bernie and AOC react to that? I'm reading a piece written by, let me find the source. This is written by Fox News, and saying that U.S. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez issued a toned-down reaction. That says everything as we listen to the next few words. A toned-down reaction Tuesday night after Democratic nominee Joe Biden separated himself from the multi-trillion-dollar Green New Deal, her signature legislative proposal. Now, you heard Biden say, the Green New Deal is not my plan, and I am the party. I am the party. I support the Biden plan I put forward, which is different than the Green New Deal. AOC wrote and responded, our differences are exactly why I joined Biden's Climate Unity Task Force, so we could set aside our differences and figure out an aggressive climate plan to address the planetary crisis at our feet. So, yeah, she's waffling back. Now, would it be because she really is accepting Biden's remarks last night that I'm the party and it's going to be my plan or no plan? Or is it, let's don't get too wild here because we might actually have people stay in our voting lane and we don't want them to leave if I start getting over the top. we do know there are a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters that probably did not take kindly to that last night, and they didn't like the fact that he didn't choose Bernie as a VP. They didn't like the fact as to that Biden won anyway from the primary. AOC began supporting Biden for president only after Bernie Sanders, her favored candidate, dropped out. If you recall also, she got enraged at NBC News in August because during the convention, she said the outlet NBC said that she had endorsed Joe Biden, or did not endorse Joe Biden. And she said, that's not true, not true. So I think last night, those few remarks from Joe Biden might be the bombshell that could hurt him more than anything else that he said or even that Trump said. But, of course, if you're looking for someone who can find something that was really, really bad for Donald Trump in the debate, you need to go to one of the sources where you expect them to take that approach. Witness here, I present document CNN Politics, Chris Saliza. Now, before you hear the remarks he made, let me take you back to the remarks made yesterday by Rudy Giuliani in advance of the debate. And he said, it is clear, judging by how they have done things in the past, the mainstream media, regardless of what happens on the debate stage coming up, which he was talking about last night, they will have already declared Trump loses, Biden wins. You hear how Rudy Giuliani prefaced it yesterday.
If he falls down, they'll say he did it on purpose to get him off his stride. It was very, very smart. If he blanks out, they'll say, ah, that'd be very, very effective against Putin. Putin will know what to say to him if he has a blank out. I mean, look, he's going to win the debate by the crooked media, no doubt about it. But I'm not going to judge it by that. They may have said Clinton won those debates, but she lost the election. And I knew she lost every one of those debates.
That was Rudy Giuliani. And he was right. She, I think, lost all the debates. And she certainly lost the election. That was the key point. Now, let me give you an impartial reaction before I jump to CNN. And this would be Doug Shawn. Now, he is a political activist and so forth. He has obviously done a lot as currently as a Fox News contributor, but 30 years as a political consultant and pollster, and has always tended to lean more to the left than some of the others you might find on his opinion. But his opinion last night, titled "Here's Who Won on Style and Substance," he said the first presidential debate following the night, the biggest takeaway is that there were no surprises. Nothing happened that would change any attitudes, cause either candidate to gain or lose any votes, or move any undecided voters one way or the other. See, that's the key point of what they were trying to do last night. We told you going into last night that a Monmouth University poll found that 3% of those who say they would be watching said we might hear something that will change and sway our mind. Otherwise, the 90-plus percent were already decided they weren't going to be changing their mind. And Doug Shawn adds, given the level of back and forth between the candidates, the substance of the candidates' answers was often lost and took a back seat to their style of argumentation and command of the room. Though in terms of style, in my view, President Trump was the clear winner. In command of the conversation, in control of the discussion, and if not presidential, certainly more in command. That little phrase, if not presidential, that was one of the big things we've been hearing as well from the left today and their evaluation last night. So, again, to the document I have in my hand from CNN and NNN, written by Chris Saliza, their CNN editor-at-large. He said President Donald Trump's bullying, cajoling, constant interruptions on Tuesday night made the whole affair confusing, difficult to follow. And while there will rightly be scads of attention paid to Trump's unwillingness to condemn white supremacists and hate groups, That's a lie, Chris, and you know it. You guys continue to hammer it. I'll come back to that. He said there was actually a moment that I found more frightening. And he says not getting anywhere near the same amount of attention. Oh, my gosh. What could be more frightening for Chris than his statement that Trump unwilling to condemn white supremacists and hate groups? It had to do with the fact that it came down to the issue when Wallace asked, "We urge your supporters to stay calm, not engage in civil unrest if you don't win." That was such a set-up question. Who the hell's been in the streets protesting, as in rioting and throwing Molotov cocktails? Oh, yeah, you know the answer. Well, anyway, Wallace went back around that talking about, so you're going to tell your people to take to the streets? Because what Trump had said before that was, he said, if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with it. I'll tell you what, from a common sense, and that's when Wallace said, does that mean you can't go along? Does that mean you're going to tell your people to take to the streets? Trump's answer, I'll tell you what it means. It means you have a fraudulent election. You're sending out 80 million ballots. Now, right there, that one answer, that statement, in the mind of CNN and Chris Cillizza, is the most frightening thing he heard, and you probably didn't hear it, did you? Because you're not looking through his lens and his myopic mind, and I'll help you understand that mind when we continue. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, so once again, we have CNN's Chris Cillizza saying the most scary thing about the event last night was Trump's worst moment, and something you probably missed is when he was asked by Wallace about the mail-in ballots. You're going to be on board? Are you urging your people to stay calm? And Trump said, well, I can't go along if the ballots are being manipulated. Can't go along with that. And Wallace said, does that mean you can't go along? Does that mean you're going to tell your people to take to the streets? Trump said, I'll tell you what it means. If it means you have a fraudulent election, you're sending out 80 million ballots. And that answer, based on that answer, the CNN analyst says that's frightening. That's basically, he said, asked whether he's going to tell your people to take to the streets, is either not decided November 3rd or in his favor. He said, it's impossible to overstate how dangerous what Trump said. What'd he say? And they said, before we get to the big picture, let's look at the facts in the Trump claims. Trump was talking about some problems in Philadelphia. Well, if you're going to look at facts, Chris, why don't you look at the facts of who's been taking to the streets lately? Who's been taking to the streets? But again, Chris goes on in his little analysis to say, in the space of a few sentences then, Trump repeated his urgings to supporters to show up at polling places to intimidate potential voters, actively refuse to call for calm in the days after the election if he's not a declared winner. This is the president of the United States, people, and even if he weren't in such a powerful position, what Trump is saying would be deeply irresponsible. As it is, what he is saying is incredibly dangerous. Period. End of statement. Analysis from Chris Cillizza. I say, I'm pulling the BS card. But you want to deal with facts and so forth. Wallace, again, when he raised the question last night, I thought, here we go again. Why? He is helping them continue to fire a shotgun trying to kill a fly that doesn't even exist. And that was back to the issue about the Charleston remarks, remember? About what Trump supposedly said. Good people on both sides. So, again, Wallace thought it's incumbent on him to ask, are you willing to condemn white supremacists? And they say he didn't do it enough again last night. Well, he's done it numerous times. The reaction was, he said, are you willing to condemn white supremacists calling group and militia groups? Trump said, sure. And then he came back around to this. He said, I'm looking at some of the copy that came out. He said, I'm prepared to do it. I'd say almost anything is from the left wing, not the right wing. I'm willing to see, do what is needed to do peace. Then do it, sir. And Biden said, do it. Say it. Trump, what do you want to call it again? Give me a name. White supremacists, right-wing militias. Biden, Proud Boys. The white supremacist right-wing militias were words from Wallace. And Biden adds, Proud Boys. Trump, Proud Boys, stand back, stand by. I'll tell you what, somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left. And therein, with no statements, they were saying that he basically was telling them to stand by for orders to take to the streets. And say, we got to do something about Antifa. Did he make it as clear and definitive as he has repeatedly in the past? No. But that's the best they've got. As I said, they're taking a shotgun trying to kill a fly that doesn't exist. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to be joined. By the way, those remarks is and the attitude that Trump did not refuse to denounce and condemn, because he did, put together by one of the writers for The Federalist. I got the political editor for The Federalist coming up right after this break.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA.
We've had the guest on before. Glad to have him back. Christopher Bedford, senior editor at The Federalist. Glad to have you again, sir.
For having me.
Yeah, and before we, before I get any more into introduction and some of the points I want to raise with you, I was quoting one of your colleagues, Emily Jashinsky, as she did a fact check on that transcript when they were trying to still insist that Trump, quote, did not refuse to denounce or condemn white supremacy at the debate. And she had a good collection of the bites that show he obviously did. But they are reading into that what they want, just as they have with their good people on both sides. Are you amazed or just frustrated or just said to hell with it, the fact that they keep bringing this line up, trying to make it stick? Good people on both sides means endorsing all the right-wing activists that go carrying torches and would be racist and everything else. Your thoughts?
I'm leaning more towards the hell with it at this point, because it's been going for so many years.
Yeah.
And it's such a cynical lie. You can listen to it from the very beginning, and it's something they've pushed, that when President Trump condemned Nazis, condemned the racists, condemned the Ku Klux Klan, which, you know, despite the fever dreams of the New York Times, are a very small fringe group that largely lives in the woods. When he did that, they said he didn't say enough words. He didn't answer every one of their questions. It's like they want to ask him every time he walks by if he condemns them, and if he's not paying close enough attention, they run a whole new news cycle. It's about as cynical as it gets.
And in this most recent proposal he came up with the other day for putting more money in the black communities and a new plan to help black Americans would make hate crime a federal crime. I mean, he was going to put that in as well. That should say, regardless of where your origin is, what your line of thinking is, a hate crime will be a federal case against you.
And his Department of Justice has cracked down on the Ku Klux Klan, whatever disparate cooking groups they have left out there, as well as Antifa. And it's really a rather interesting thing I thought last night, that he was asked to condemn white supremacy, an old and stupid and disproven idea. But he, as an organization, whereas Joe Biden claimed that Antifa, an actual semi-organized revolutionary group literally occupying numerous American cities, is not an organization, but an idea. And I thought the president had a wonderful line. It will probably be used over and over again in their advertisements going forward. But an idea does not hit you over the head with a bat.
And of course, by the way, Biden, when he said that, he tried to quote the FBI director as to if it's an organization are just a loosely gathered group, but or philosophy. But
I'm the FBI director.
Yeah, and by the way, I wish Trump had nailed him and said, why did you guys not one time in your entire Democrat National Convention, when the streets were on fire in numerous cities, not even mention a stand against violence? I think that was one thing he kept driving home that I thought was good, that where do you stand on law and order? You can't even say it. You don't give me one police group that's endorsed you.
And the FBI doesn't like to call these things organizations. The same thing goes for Islamic extremism, which is both an idea and an organization, because it means work and it means being held accountable, and they don't want to be held accountable for that. President Trump hit very hard on law and order, exactly to your point. That was something that he really nailed Joe Biden on. And it drew into contrast how many other opportunities he had where, in his debating style and his interrupting style, he kept Joe Biden on his heels, at least for the first half an hour especially, but failed largely to land the substantive blows on his own record that I think a lot of his supporters and some of the undecided people would have liked on the economy, on energy, on some of the foreign policy accomplishments. The law and order was a good example of where he really, really landed the blow. But other than that, there was not too many strong hits for the president.
You know, I agreed. In fact, in my opening monologue, I compared it to two boxers, and they're being judged by on points. And Trump threw most of the punches and connected with most of them, but there was no real haymaker. And Biden did a good job of covering up, and so you almost have to pull a draw on it. I said in my analysis after looking at all of it, I've been to goat ropings and train wrecks, and I don't think anything compared to what we saw last night. What's your analysis overall? Did anyone win?
I don't think anybody won. I think everybody lost. That includes the moderator, Chris Wallace, who was seemingly incapable of keeping the contest moving along, and also didn't address some of the questions people expected him to address, and address some other questions in a very Democratic mindset. But mainly the failure here was on the two candidates. Joe Biden either made the case that he ought to be the president, although he did, of course, make the case that Orange Man bad, something we've always known, he thinks. And Donald Trump failed to make the case for his administration. And it's not too uncommon to see this with a sitting president. We saw this with George W. Bush versus John Kerry. We saw this with Barack Obama versus Mitt Romney. We even saw this with Ronald Reagan versus Walter Mondale. In the first debate, sitting presidents often go in less prepared, kind of thinking that they've got this, like they've had so many sparring matches before, so many press conferences before, whereas the other candidate, who's interviewing for the job, prepares like their life depends on it. And we saw that again this last night, and it was disappointing to see.
To that extent, it's also like a heavyweight match. I mean, the contender has to go well above and beyond the heavyweight. The heavyweight champ just has to kind of make sure he doesn't get knocked down and can still come out for the next round.
Exactly.
Now, with that in mind, and how they did it, and you mentioned Chris Wallace. I'll come back to him in a moment. We had so many interruptions going back and forth. Some are thinking that if Trump had not interrupted enough, that Biden would have run out of steam. He would have walked himself into a circle on some of the areas where he started down the road that didn't seem to have any exit for him.
I generally agree with that analysis. Donald Trump, since the 1980s, has been an expert at putting his opponents, or even friendly interviewers you'll see in his interviews, on their heels almost immediately, startling them or taking control of the situation. He did that in the first 20 minutes, and it was remarkable. But what Joe Biden does worse is when he's speaking. When he's looking at Donald Trump and saying, would you pipe down, man? He's doing just fine. It's when he's rambling and getting incoherent tiring himself.
He said, shut up. Just flat told the president,
shut up. Quit yapping.
Yeah.
And those were some of the lines that he probably did better on, because it made it look like he was somehow in control of the situation. And the president didn't allow him to make his points, which he generally is not that good at anymore.
Well, of course, that was one of the other issues, too, is how Biden would hold up for a full 90 minutes, because his group wanted to have, at 30-minute intervals, a 5-10-minute break, and their response was, our guy speaks 90 minutes all the time. And the point I'd made, that Biden in other debates was one among many, not one-on-one, really, when you get down to it. So I would have to give him points. I thought he did well as far as how he appeared and responded, generally speaking. but maybe we just set the bar too low to begin with for him.
Yeah, I think they did set the bar too low, and Donald Trump was wise in the weeks leading up to say that Joe Biden's a good debater. Because if the bar is set to, can you string a sentence together and not collapse in public, then you're largely going to beat that bar, unless, of course, you're Hillary Clinton, who collapsed after 90 minutes in fair weather during her election. Trump had a much higher bar to reach, and it was pretty clear throughout that the president had far more energy, was far more vigorous than his opponent. But when Joe Biden's only job is to show us that he's alive and he's cognizant, he certainly hit that. He did rather well last night.
You're listening to Christopher Bedford, senior editor of The Federalist. So once again, to the moderator, these things are tough. I mean, I used to do a live program with a co-host, and it was very clear to me. I had to tell the director, when he keeps going on and on, I can't get him shut up. Kill his mic. I'll throw us to commercial. Wallace doesn't have that opportunity, and yeah, he had a very contentious party on both sides, but particularly Trump. He was in the lion cage. He had no whip, no gun, and all the lions were loose.
That's totally true. And Chris Wallace is generally a very good interviewer. I don't envy anyone trying to keep control of that situation last night without setting them up for a Ronald Reagan, I paid for this microphone type moment, which would have gotten the fans all riled up against the moderator even more so.
Right.
What did disappoint me was some of the subject matters. We were promised a question or teased a question on Roe v. Wade that never appeared, and other questions that seemed to fall very far into Joe Biden's preferred talking points of, will you accept the election results? Why do you dare challenge man-made global warming? The possible equivalence of right-wing militias to left-wing militias, as if left-wing militias aren't currently besieging mayors in major American cities, attacking police officers and civilians, and killing Trump supporters. There have been terrible right-wing militias in the 20s. We saw the Oklahoma City bombing, but we're not talking 30 years ago. We're talking right now, and the equivalence of that we constantly saw throughout the debate, I thought was disappointing.
All right. I do appreciate your time and your analysis. And, folks, you can read his piece at The Federalist, Christopher Bedford, senior editor at The Federalist. It's titled, A Two-Man Debate Turns Into a Free-for-All, Did Anyone Win? I thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you.
We'll do it again. Always glad to have you on board. So this issue about the moderator, what are you supposed to do if you're trying to do that? I mean, I've been a moderator at some debates, not a presidential debate, and I can kind of give you a perspective from that side of the aisle, and let me do it for you when we continue. And also, one big question, did Joe Biden lose a lot of the left support last night? Did he lose on that point? Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So in high school and again in college, at least for a period of time in college, I was on the debate team. I really enjoyed it. I mean, you in a true debate, you were given two issues. One of them I recall specifically was, we need to stop nuclear proliferation. We're at overkill right now. Or we need to continue to make sure we have more nuclear arms ready. It's a pro-con issue. And when you walk into the debate room in a contest, you found out right then which side you're supposed to argue. So you had to prepare both sides and argue both as strongly as you can. And then, of course, you have a debate coach or someone judging. I remember one of the responses I got from one debate judge after we finished, he said, I'm going to give you a lot of high marks, he said, on your rhetoric and your presentation. He said, is your father a Baptist preacher? Because you sure sound like one. No, he's not, sir, but I appreciate it, I guess. So a debate like that, is one thing. What you have last night is not really a true debate. If it were a true debate, you really would have just a limited time, answer this question, then answer this one in retort. They try to do that all the time on political debates. It does not really work well. And then the debates I've done involving congressional candidates, Senate candidates, probably the most one of the more recent I'd done was when McCaskill and Aiken and drawing a blank on the other candidate, you know, trying to balance all of them out and make sure everyone got fair time and yet held folks to an answer and got a made sure they answered the question. Chris Wallace was trying to do that. I want to read and share with you. I may try to book this guy for tomorrow. I just didn't have time today. He wrote a piece for CNN. He does a lot of stuff. He is Todd Graham, director of debate at Southern Illinois University. And he has considered with his debate teams have won national championships, recognized three times he has as the National Debate Coach of the Year. So obviously he comes from a lot of extensive credentials on that point. And his response on this thing last night was, this is the worst debate in the history of presidential debating, and I'm including primary debates. Nothing else comes close. He said, I decided to grade the debate on who was most responsible for the race to the bottom, who was most responsible for failing the American public, President Trump, Joe Biden, or moderator Chris Wallace. Now, I don't have time to get into all of his views, but let me share what he said about Chris Wallace. I was right, rightfully, it turned out, about the moderator. Unfortunately, Wallace decided to be invisible in his primary job here as a leader of a worthwhile debate. He was much stronger 4 years ago when he could keep Trump within reason. Wallace's performance will be remembered for his not standing up to Trump and laying down the law early on, and then it was too late, shouting at the current president. Like a bad parent, he was absent when needed and overbearing. Let me read that again. Like a bad parent, he was absent when needed and overbearing when it was too late. Now, again, these are the remarks from Todd Graham, who is a three-time National Debate Coach of the Year, teaches debate at Southern Illinois University, teams winning five national championships, and a piece he wrote for CNN. So he looked at all of it, but this idea of who can control these guys, that's a big issue. Believe me, I mentioned earlier in the interview with Chris Bedford, the Federalist, almost like the guy being in the lion cage. He doesn't have his whip and he doesn't have a gun, and all the tigers and lions are doing whatever the hell they want. And you can't get out of the cage. You just got to kind of keep them apart. Yelling at them won't stop it. Going silent won't stop it. What do you do? Now, the one thing that is pointed out in this piece, the analysis from the debate coach was, reference Wallace, he said, the notion of facilitating an open discussion played right into the hands of the biggest liar and interrupter on stage. Debates with Trump simply aren't like anything else. The idea behind being invisible is a moderator shouldn't get in the way of a good debate. Wallace, by losing control of the candidates, caused the chaos. We kind of got his viewpoint there for the debate coach as to he's not a Trump supporter when he said calling him the biggest liar and interrupter on stage. The biggest liar? I mean, come on. Where are you going to come up with a phrase like that? But then again from him, he said, and when did Wallace think that allowing Trump to ask Biden questions and then making Biden answer by failing to stop Trump and at one point even prompting Biden to somehow answer Trump's question was a proper approach? It demonstrated an amazing lack of fairness, intended or not. He gave Chris Wallace, if you're grading on the debate last night, an F. I guess he could have given him A for absent. It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying I could have done better. I'm not even beginning to say that. And we'll see how it's handled the next time around when the two of them back on stage. Well, there's a lot more to break down and cover on this, and Dr. Gerard Lamero will join us in the second hour. I'm really interested in his viewpoint on who won. Or more importantly, how's it going to affect anything, if it is? And we're not going to do news and commentary at the top of the next hour as we usually do, because I want to focus entirely today on what happened last night. Whatever you want to call it. A debate, a cage match, a circus, or as one of my daughters said, a debacle.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.